You're listening to the Laugh Button Podcast on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Laugh Button Podcast. I am your host and the editor-in-chief of thelaughbutton.com, Matt Kleinschmidt. We're on the Riotcast Network, so check us out on riotcast.com. And with me is Bram Teitelman.
Yeah, I'm waiting for like a coffee mug that says the Laugh Button Podcast co-host.
Well, I'm just kind of like, you know what? I'm just kind of afraid of commitment right now.
I don't even need that. Just get like a styrofoam cup and write it in magic marker crayon.
You don't need a promise ring or anything like that?
No.
Oh, cool.
I promise I don't.
So Bram. Hi, Bram. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
The editor-in-chief of our brother-sister site, MetalInsider.net.
It's a brother site.
Brother.
It's mother site.
It's our mother site.
Tell your children not to walk out.
So yeah, funny enough about that, Danzig comes up because we hung out with some folks last night. We were literally talking about the Misfits and how very Jersey those guys were.
Super Jersey, Lodi.
Bram, guess who our guest is this week?
I couldn't possibly guess. Wait, Greg Stone?
It is Greg Stone. For those who don't know, Greg Stone is someone who I've seen do tremendous comedy work around New York City. I think he's a very sharp with it comedy mind. I think he's a great dude. I didn't realize this at the time, but when I had Anthony DeVito on the podcast, I was like, he mentioned Greg Stone. I was like, oh, we gotta get Greg on the podcast. He's great. And Anthony's like, oh, I'll make that happen for you. He left the podcast studio, and less than 5 minutes later, Greg's texting me, and we set up a time for him to come do the podcast. We sat around and just kind of bullshit. Like, but Greg was also a dude who I could sit around and talk to Greg for 5 hours, because after that podcast, we kind of did. Like, I had another podcast taping afterwards, so we limited our time, but it was just like, he's a Jersey guy, so we talked about all these Jersey punk and hardcore bands and like the scene and of music, and we kind of knew of a lot of the same players and stuff like that too. So I have a feeling Greg's going to have to come back on this podcast and just kind of talk more about it with us too. So he's our guest this week. Super excited about Greg. So what's new with you, man? What's happened since we've last chatted?
Well, you did a podcast without me.
I did.
And it's cool.
With John Glazer.
I'm sure no one noticed, right?
It was one of our more popular episodes. I don't really know. Actually, I know, but I'm lying. To you.
I think that people might tune in for the guests and me. I'm a guest most of the time, right?
I think people tune in because I'm awesome and they like what I have to say about stuff in the world of comedy.
Very modest, too.
I'm modest as shit. I don't know what you're talking about. Yep. So what's new? So have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet?
I still haven't seen the first one, so I'm a little behind.
Yeah, you're just a little bit behind. So you're telling me.
I saw Galaxy Quest.
So you're telling me not to spoil it. By the way, speaking of Galaxy Quest, let's jump right into it. There's a new show that Fox greenlit that stars Seth MacFarlane and Adriana Palacki, and it looks kind of Galaxy Quest-ish.
You said Seth MacFarlane. It sounded like you said that.
Isn't it what the guy that
Seth
created?
Seth MacFarlane.
Oh.
MacFarlane.
Okay. Seth MacFarlane.
Yes. Yeah.
MacFarlane. The guy who created Family Guy and
the Cleveland
American
Show.
Dad and the Cleveland Show and all that stuff. Anyway, he's in a live action.
Ted and Ted 2.
Ted
and that shitty Western no one saw.
A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah.
I did not see that. You're correct. But anyway, so yeah, speaking of Galaxy Quest, he just had a show greenlit and it's coming to Fox in the fall because it's basically Galaxy Quest. It's him getting the opportunity to run shop on his own spaceship. And then
I can't wait to hear the first rape joke.
And then his ex-wife becomes his first in command. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, that's actually a good spot we can start here is the upfronts are this week. And for those who don't know what the upfronts are, it's television networks giving a peek of what their new lineup's going to be in the upcoming fall season. It's like their way of presenting, well, hey, this is what our programming slate's going to look like.
Buy some ads.
That's basically what it is, and then they kind of like, wine you and dine you and do some fun things with ad buyers. It's in New York City.
Drake's playing
at the Adult Swim one. And that's the other thing too, is upfront, some of the networks have turned them into just kind of excuses to have a party. Adult Swim, shockingly enough, is kind of leading the charge. And they usually have a big show over at Terminal 5. And last year was Nicki Minaj. Tonight, the rumor is that Drake is performing. Actually, I don't think it is a rumor. Drake is performing.
It's confirmed.
By the time people hear this podcast, Drake will have performed. Outkast performed a couple years back, which is really cool. Saw Miley Cyrus, believe it or not. I never thought I'd see Miley Cyrus, but Miley Cyrus performed. Jay-Z performed once, too. So, yeah, it's beyond the pomp and circumstance for the quote-unquote industry people. The upfront of these networks, the ability to present their new shows, that's happening. And they also, basically the week before upfronts, which is like last Thursday and Friday, is kind of when it all comes down, where they tell you about this show's canceled, this show's renewed, blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. stuff. And there was kind of a bloodbath like last Thursday.
What show are you most upset about going away?
I don't know if I could say I'm like most upset about it, but they canceled a ton of comedy. They canceled the Tim Allen comedy. They canceled Ken Jeong's comedy, Dr. Ken. They canceled Two Broke Girls. They canceled, what else did they cancel? They canceled, they did not cancel the Mindy Project, not the Mindy Project, New Girl.
New Girl,
they renewed
it
for one final season. It's a shortened season. And they renewed Brooklyn Nine-Nine because those were like bubble shows. So like there was definitely a lot of shows that kind of like, oh, they're giving the axe and you're like, oh, damn, that kind of sucks. But with that being said, every time that they are canceling shows, there's also like the announcement that new shows are going to happen too. Like they greenlit a new Mindy Kaling series.
Glenn Howerton show.
Glenn Howerton's new show got greenlit. Bobby Moynihan's new show got greenlit.
Which I guess means he's done at SNL.
Yeah, that probably is what that means. You know, he's probably going to, well, this whole season of SNL, season 42, which actually wraps this week with The Rock hosting, Bobby hasn't been like super, I don't want to say super present because that's the wrong way of putting it. But like at the same time, he's obviously been like doing other things too. So they renewed that. I'm sorry, they greenlit that. So, and then the Seth MacFarlane show, which I was just talking about, was greenlit. And then they also, like, they showed trailers and the network show trailers and shows for, like, stuff that, like, we already knew was coming. Like, we knew Jim Jefferies had a new late night show. We didn't get a trailer till this week, so that's on the website. Jordan Klepper, we know he's going to replace the 11:30 slot for Comedy Central. They announced an hour-long Jordan Klepper solves the gun issue, kind of like a spoof funny thing to kind of keep Jordan Klepper in the mind of other people and until like his show is actually ready to premiere. You know, Tracy Morgan got a new sitcom.
Sitcom.
Hey. I was hoping you didn't notice that. Tiffany Haddish joined that, she's a past guest of the Left Button podcast, so she's actually now on that. I think Cedric the Entertainer is on that as well. So we basically have like, you know, a rundown of like everything that's going on as far as development slates. If you go to the Left Button, it's like tons of comedy show news, is like what's going on with True TV, which include new shows from like Bobcat Goldthwait, Amy Sedaris, Lisa Traeger, Chris Gethard. Obviously, we knew Chris Gethard, past guest of the Left Button podcast very recently. The Chris Gethard show is actually coming to True TV as well. So a lot of really, really great stuff's happening. I want to talk about one show in particular that I'm actually super psyched about.
Let's go.
And let's Glow. It's Glow. Which I think is actually going to be kind of fun. But it's not a network television, but it's a Netflix show. But they've been teasing the show for a long time. Alison Brie and Marc Maron are basically the two starring people on this. And it's based on the 80s series?
It was a
wrestling
Gorgeous sport? Ladies of Wrestling, yeah.
But I don't know what to call it. It wasn't a TV show.
It was wrestling.
It was sports entertainment. You know, I guess
it was like current wrestling, really.
Yeah, yeah, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And basically, I didn't know this at the time because I was a child of the 80s, but I was probably like, you know, I was under double digits in the 80s when the show was on the air, but I watched it. But I didn't realize, very much like I didn't realize with pro wrestling at the time, or the WWF, but is that it was basically actors and actresses trying out for parts. So this is a fictionalized version of what that show was. I don't think it's not based on any main characters, but there is kind of like, if you remember Glow, there was the pretty farm girl, there was the and there's all stereotypes of the 80s. Like there was there was like the Asian woman who like had all the Asian stereotypes. There was, you know, the
sassy black woman.
There was a sassy black woman, there was the large Samoan woman, there was the Middle Eastern woman, and they really played up those stereotypes that actually wrestling still does that to this day.
What do you mean? The Iron Sheik isn't really a
No. Well, that was the Iron Sheik was the 80s, wasn't it? But pro wrestling in 2017, like it's still pretty stereotypical. Like some of these characters that these guys have, they definitely play off stereotypes. But so this is a fictionalized version of basically Glow. So
from like the people that did Orange Is the New Black,
yeah, Kenji Johan,
right? So it's kind of like,
and she did Weeds as well. So
it's kind of like Orange Is the New Black and Blue.
Oh, come on,
what?
Really?
There's wrestling. It's
come on,
all right.
Come on. But I will say this: Kenji Johan has a very great track record and history of. She has dark comedies. Orange Is the New Black is almost not even a comedy at this point. The first season was really the only quote-unquote comedy that show had. The rest of it's become like a very dark comedy, almost like a dramedy. But I have a feeling Glow is going to kind of be the same thing. Like, not that Alison Brie doesn't have comic chops, nor does Marc Maron. They both are incredibly comically talented. I think it'll start to drift into the more of that kind of element.
I think it'll be interesting to see Marc Maron play someone other than Marc Maron.
This is very true. Most comedians that are successful pretty much play themselves
right.
on these TV shows. shows.
Maybe by the second episode, he'll be like, I have a new marketing thing for this wrestling thing. Why don't we start something called a podcast?
There's these things called MP3s and computers. So I do see it eventually kind of like skewing in that direction. But what I do like about it is Kenzie Johann is obviously she's a pro when it comes to writing very strong and interesting women in these roles. So, and since the show is based on GLOW, I can only imagine that 80 to 95, or maybe even a larger percentage of the actual show is going to be women. So I'm kind of looking forward to it for that reason.
It'll be fun watching how they depict the 80s too.
Yeah.
There's going to be enough people that were around and saw GLOW the first time.
You know what's funny about that stuff? And I think about this all the time every time I see a period-based show, movie, sitcom, whatever. It's always off. I don't know, and I don't know, but that like, but I never feel like nobody completely totally nails it, because hindsight is 20/20, and you know, stereotypes build up in your head, and like right now it's 2017. I don't feel like there's anything very stereotypical about 2017.
There will be.
There will be, though. Like I
like
didn't feel
stupid
that,
like Snapchat, like
I guess so. Yeah,
chicks with dumb like dogs
and
know,
filters and all that kind
of
stuff. Yeah, but like. Like, I was a child. I was really a teenager in the 90s.
A president who might be the worst person ever.
And we talk about the 90s. Yeah, well, I'm just trying to talk over that because we're trying to avoid politics today. The world is melting, but let's avoid that today.
That's very foul of you.
It is very foul of me. So I don't know. I feel like the 90s. I felt like there wasn't really much to make fun of the 90s, but like the few things that kind of came out. And I really do feel like it really does come down to style. And I guess because of that, I think because it's style, it is dictated more by the women of that era than the men, because the women tended to be the more fashionable of the two sexes, I believe.
I guess.
So when people say the 90s, they say like, "Oh," like I would say the 90s to my wife. My wife would be like, "Oh, I wore my hair like this. I wore my jeans like that. I wore my shirts like this." And me, I'll be like, "Yeah, I just wore jeans and a t-shirt the same way I do in 2017. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, the 90s, you have your grunge fashion. And
yeah, but dude, I wore a flannel shirt the other day. You know what I mean? Like, it's so, while I get that, I think that trends and fashion in general are more dictated by like women, because they're more fashionable creatures. Let's be honest.
Women be shopping.
No, I didn't mean it like that, but mm-hmm. You know, women be shopping. I meant it more like in the terms of like women are more fashionable. So, GLOW. So we have the trailer up for that. It's been teased for a long time. They've been teasing it for, I feel like, the last year at least, but the actual official trailer is up and it premieres. It drops at the end of June on Netflix. So that's definitely something that I'll be looking forward to watching. I'll add it to the queue. A bunch of guys did a bunch of late night spots this week or in the last week. Mark Norman did it because he had his new special just came out, Don't Be Yourself, which was a great special. You definitely got to watch that. Pete Lee did some stand-up. We got Vladimir Camino did some stand-up. Tracy Morgan's, Rami Youssef did some stand-up. Tracy Morgan's new special dropped this week. It does drop this week. It did drop this week, so check out Tracy Morgan's new special. And the other thing is, you know, I see a lot of comics doing is they're giving commencement speeches. This is kind of I don't want to say it's a new occurrence, but like comedians have, and why wouldn't they be? They're good public speakers, and they're funny and entertaining. So Will Ferrell gave a commencement speech at USC. Maria Bamford gave a commencement speech at her alma mater. There's just a lot of those commencement speeches kind of floating around the internet these days, and it's really fun to see that kind of stuff. So good times on that front, too.
Were there any in particular that you liked?
Will Ferrell's was good. Maria Bamford.
Didn't he sing I Will Always Love You?
He did. He did sing I Will Always Love You. Maria Bamford's was interesting. First of all, I love Maria Bamford. Second of all, she was clearly nervous because that's Maria Bamford's thing. It was probably about a 10-minute speech, and the first 3 or 4 minutes was about how much you got paid by the college or university to come and speak. It's an interesting watch. I definitely recommend everyone kind of finding it and watching. You have it up on laughbutton.com. It's her talking about how much she got paid, but the reason is because she does a callback at the end of it. Basically, she gives to ruin the surprise, she gives all the money she was paid to speak at this college to someone graduating, saying, "Hey, pay off your student loans," basically, which is really nice, generous of her. So I think that's kind of the whole point why she was talking about how much she was offered. you know, how much did she counter with and this, that, and the other thing, because I think she, it was her way of kind of saying, like, you know, this school could have given me more money, and therefore I would have been able to give you more money. But then she also, it got weird in the middle. She flubbed the line, which was actually a very good line that she flubbed, and she was definitely a little nervous and stuff like that. So while I don't think it was the most eloquent of graduation speeches, I do think that Maria Bamford is like, she's a goddamn national treasure when it comes to comedy. So watching her trying to give this speech was actually very cool. So that's happening too, and I'm sure we'll see more of that for the next couple weeks too. Another thing we covered this week, which I thought was actually really great, is one of our writers we put together after I got to give him a shout. His name's Andrew. He put together a very comprehensive conversation. We called it the Kin of Comedy. He interviewed, I want to say, H.G. Wells' grandson, Andy.
You mean W.C. Fields.
I'm sorry, W.C. Fields, not H.G. Wells. That's funny. He interviewed W.C. Fields' grandson, Sam Kinison's brother, Bill Hicks' brother, George Carlin's daughter.
Groucho Marx's grandson.
Groucho Marx's grandson, or Groucho Marx's son and W.C. Fields' grandson, something like that, yeah. And Andy Kaufman's brother and sister, too. And, like, basically talked about what's it like having a famous comedian as your sibling or your grandfather or your dad, basically.
He couldn't get Jim Belushi?
There were a couple other ones, but, like, it was something he'd been working on for a long time. It's actually really, really fascinating, just kind of talking about, like, and the weird thing, which I don't know if this was it wasn't really necessarily something we planned outright, but it kind of lent itself better to the piece. It was all of deceased comedians, so a lot of the conversations turned into, how does Steve Hicks protect the legacy of his brother Bill? How does Kelly Carlin decide what, you know, is best for George Carlin, and so on and so forth. Of like, how do you preserve the legacy? Because that's on them now too. So I know that he was trying to talk to Rain Pryor. That's the other one I was thinking of too. She didn't. The scheduling didn't work out for that.
She had prior commitments.
God damn it. So yeah, I guess she did. You know what? I give up. I guess she did. Dude,
I'm just breaking myself.
Here's the thing. I want a video. I want to add a video element to this podcast because the smirk on your face, like,
it's just the stupidest thing. And I say it, and it works.
The smirk on your face, it's like a 6-year-old in a crowded room full of people, and he gets out a really juicy fart, and he's so excited about it, and no one knows it was him, but he knows, and he is so jazzed about it.
I just like making Matt admit that it's funny. Kind of like, he wants to move on, he's like, all right, that's really funny.
It's just one, but like the look on your face is what does half it, and I feel like we're depriving our audience by not giving them a video camera in the corner, so who knows. So yeah, I don't even know where we're at. So yeah, so there's a lot of other really great stuff.
Kin of Comedy.
The Kin of Comedy is what we're talking about.
Laughbutton.com.
Read it. We basically talked to a lot of these comedians about the legacy of their parents and that kind of stuff too. So it's a really good time. I don't know what to tell you. So so we got the Kin of Comedy, we got Upfronts, we got commencement speeches happening, we have the Glow premiere. David Letterman was just announced as the 2017 recipient for the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Past people include like Bill Cosby, Billy Crystal, Tina Fey, they've all won in the past, so that'd be great. We have awesome video of TJ Miller trying to parasail onto a barge full of dancing emojis in Cannes for the new movie that he's in called The Emoji Movie. That's totally worth watching. Jimmy Kimmel's going to return.
He looks really terrified, actually.
Well, I think because it went horribly wrong. Like, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, this went wrong. Like, he was like, first of all, he was live streaming, so like you heard everything he was saying.
Yeah,
and it took longer than it should have, was from what I gather. So
yeah, it was definitely surprise emoji and poop emoji to sum things up.
Jeez, I don't tell you. Also, other news stuff that just kind of hit the wire. Conan renewed his contract with TBS until 2022, so another 4 years.
Now, what's going on with that? Wasn't there something saying he was going to like not necessarily do it daily? And
yeah, that was actually the news part of it. And like, you know, they want Conan content. They just they want to figure out how to reconfigure it. So I think what they're really doing is, They're just kind of re-updating all that kind of stuff. So it's basically, he inked a 4-year deal with TBS to kind of continue doing that type of stuff. And then basically they're working on some other things too, expanding Team Coco content for digital and branded content, podcasting, mobile gaming, pay TV, tours, all that kind of stuff. So they really are kind of, they're in the Conan game. They're just trying to figure out, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure as that progresses, we'll find out more stuff too.
For sure.
Yeah, totally. And then Arrested Development, season 5 coming at you. Ba-doom, ching.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. Awesome.
I really can't wait.
No. I'm very excited. It'll be great too. So,
but hopefully it'll be a little bit more linear than the one episode per character.
Yeah, I think what happened with that is there was a dip in quality. I'm a huge Arrested Development fan. I'll be the first to admit there was a dip in quality because of that. But I think everyone acknowledged that, so they signed everyone on to be like, okay, we got to have everyone interacting at this point too. Also, this sounds weird, but at the time when they were trying to reunite people, some people had like red hot careers, and I don't think those careers are as red hot as they were anymore. Case in point, Michael Cera. He was starring in movies at the time. He hasn't really been in a movie much. He hasn't been in many big blockbuster movies lately.
He's probably seen some blockbuster movies.
He's
maybe gone to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 or Logan or something. I don't know.
No, but like another thing is that was really a big thing. Is his contract, when they were trying to renew his contract or they were trying to bring him on, he was so busy shooting stuff. And like, I mean, he was putting out, it seemed like there was a comedy every 6 months with Michael Cera's face on it.
Sure.
And This Is the End is the last big thing I remember him being in, and that wasn't really a starring role.
And also, you got to think that since 2013, when the last season aired, Netflix,
I can't believe
has,
it's already been 7 years, I know, or four years.
I can't believe how bad at math you are.
I'm terrible at math.
My point is that like Netflix is white hot now.
This is true too. So now,
like, not only do they have the money, but they have comedy pretty much.
And I got,
like,
on
lockdown.
And on that front, I got to give a shout out to our buddy Sean at the Comics Comic. He actually put together a really nice piece for Decider, talking about the key players behind the Netflix boom in stand up comedy, which, you know, traces back to mainly two people. You know, one of them being Robbie, formerly of Just for Laughs, who's a really swell dude. So,
right.
So go read Sean's article on Decider. Huge props to Sean for that. Let's end on that. Let's end on the story from Sean, and let's kick this interview over to Greg Stone here on the Laugh Button Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With me today, comedian Greg Stone.
How you doing, man?
It's officially
good to be here.
It's officially recording, Greg.
Oh, we're great.
Yeah. Basically, right before this recording, Greg was like, "I'll just talk until you just like tell me to shut the fuck up." So
yeah.
That's what
I don't stop. The voice just slows down when I'm listening, but for the most part, there's always something screaming in my head, and when I'm talking, I'm just letting you have it. I'm just having you whatever's going on in my brain.
Is that like a thing? Because I talk a lot too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'll ramble.
Yeah.
I try to make sense.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even try anymore because it's like funny is not making sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, you know, like squirrels have feelings too. Why is that a sentence that just popped in my head? I don't know. It's just where my brain goes.
Squirrels. So how are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm great.
This is the first time I've met you officially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've seen you do stand up over the years. Actually, I want to say it's been a while since I've seen you. Last time I saw you, I want to say you're opening for like Nick Turner's album taping.
I did
last year.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it's been a while. It's been a while. Yeah, I was there. I was hanging out. I was chilling. I was just lurking in the shadows. That's what I do. I'm a shadow lurker.
I love Nick. Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm a lurker too. I like to really just kind of. Most of the time people see me, they don't recognize me because, like I was telling you before.
Like I said, like you had a beard when I last saw you, basically.
Yeah, I just do the beard until it grows out thick where it annoys me, and then I shave it, but I never trim. So it's constantly. Yeah, yeah. You're like, I bet
different
a few times when you saw me, you'd constantly see me in the same state of beard. But like if you go like 2 months earlier, then it's like, he's a shaved guy. Oh, he's a full beard guy.
I've had a beard for years, but it's laziness.
Yeah,
100%. I hate shaving.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I got a job where I don't need to shave, so like, fuck it. My dad had a beard. He still does.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's more like, he's gray now. He's gray and bald, which is where I'm going. So congrats on me. You know, what can I say? I don't know why we're talking about beards. We should be talking about comedy. Let's talk about some comedy.
Sure.
So your story, where does your story begin?
With comedy, I started.
No. When did your mom and dad go back even further?
Yeah, and he was working at Sears. He was trying to sell a refrigerator. And
No. We don't need to go that far. But when did your comedy career begin?
Well, it started. I'll tell you, the beginning was when I was very young. My mom, I asked my mom, because my dad did comedy too.
Oh, really? I didn't know this. Oh,
yeah, he wasn't famous or anything. He just worked at Bananas in New Jersey.
Hasbrook Heights. Isn't that venue like a room in a hotel?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like a hotel conference room that they just put up like signs as Bananas? Yeah, everyone performs there.
And I think it's a genius fucking way to do a comedy club. They don't pay for liquor.
Yeah.
There's no overhead. There's no liquor license. They have like the wait staff is just, so they just put up a sign and then have a giant room and then have Nick DiPaolo come.
I know. Bobby's there all the time. Yeah. Everyone's there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Okay. It's like, why is this not the, I mean, I feel like I could open it with just enough to pay a headliner. Then you do the first show and then make some money from that.
All you really need.
Yeah.
I might go in the business of, that'll be my thing. I'll just like rent out hotel rooms across the country and just put on comedy shows there.
Why the fuck not?
Yeah, I know. Well, they're not really conducive because they're usually big ceilings and all that kind of stuff too. So I know comedians like the tight, cramped spaces. I don't know why.
Yeah, but for the road, like for New York, I like a nice tight room. But for the road, I've performed. I mean, I would just be happy enough to be in a room with a microphone with most of the fucking places I've performed at.
Yeah.
But yeah. But the room is always great. They like coordinate off and off, so Bananas is always fun.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. Your dad works to work at just so you know, this is the podcast.
I love
it's tangent upon tangent, circle around, let's do it again. So
Yeah.
So okay, so your dad was a comedian.
My dad did comedy. Okay. And so I always wondered, like, did I do it because my dad did it, or was it something I wanted? And my mom said she was like, you've wanted to do stand-up since you were talking.
Really?
Yeah, she said when you were little, you came upstairs. I said, what do you want to be when you grow up, Greg? And you said, I want to be a communist. And she was like, what the hell is he talking about? She's like, I want to yell at people. And she's like, a communist? Like, she was like, he really means communist. Like, what the fuck is this kid watching? Then sees me watching Gallagher, and I was like, communist. And she was like, that's comedian. He means comedian.
Gallagher, man, those specials were on television all the fucking time.
So much.
I remember so many Gallagher specials as a child.
How old are you? I'm sorry.
I'm 37.
Yeah,
so
I'm 35.
Okay, so we're same shit. I just remember them
so much Gallagher.
I don't know where they were. I don't know what channels they were. Yeah. I just know that I feel like every weekend there was a Gallagher special, and I've seen Gallagher Over Your Head, where the artwork is like him hanging out in like a pool of like watermelons.
Yeah.
I've seen that special a billion times. Yeah. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
And then the one where there's the big bouncy chair thinger.
Yes, the big chair. I remember that big chair one. I remember not understanding anything up until he smashed the fruit.
Yeah, I was the same way.
Like, I don't know what he's talking about, but just when he gets to the fruit thing, I'm like, this is comedy.
Genius.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. This is funny. I'm a kid. It was awesome.
Yeah. He had very political stuff. Like, there was an episode where he got, a special where he shaved off the horseshoe ring thing he had on his head.
Okay.
He had this, like, long, you know what Gallagher looks like. I'm explaining the Gallagher to you. Like, you have the, like, you need to know what Gallagher looks like. But there's a point where he shaved that off and he was just bald. And I remember it was a very politically tinged special and had a bunch of like heads of state and presidents on there. And he was like shooting them with beer guns and stuff like that. But I remember when Gallagher got political.
Yeah.
And I actually remember that. That was probably when my first recollection of, Gallagher just doesn't smash watermelons.
Yeah.
That was like how that resonated with me. And I was 10, 11 years old, maybe a little older than that. But
As a kid, I was like, well, you can't smash watermelons the whole time. So he's probably building up to it with whatever the hell he's talking about, which I just didn't understand.
How does that act start in clubs? could you imagine an act starting down in the comedy cellar?
Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah, like, I'm going to smash a fruit. Like, where that even came. Why you'd think that even be entertaining?
The only thing I can think of is, like, someone pelting him with fruit because he was doing a bad job and he just took it and started smashing. That's how his career started.
But you know what?
We should get to the bottom of this, Greg.
I would love, I am completely enthralled with this. What I do have an idea, though, is I think that with YouTube now, you don't see violence. You don't see any of this stuff. You'd never see a fruit being smashed. Now I could look it up, but then that was like a thing to see. Like,
it was a spectacle,
It was a spectacle. Yeah. You don't see car crashes. You don't see anything. A guy smashing a fruit when no one... You've probably never seen that in your life.
And I just remember people having the wherewithal to wear like rain suits in the first the splash zone in the front. I'm like, wait, so people actually knew this was coming?
They knew, and they came prepared. They've seen it before.
I know.
You gotta see it again.
I know. It's crazy.
Okay, so yeah, so Gallagher, he was everywhere when I was a kid. I don't remember. Yeah. He was probably the biggest comedian for like the 80s. Yeah. I would imagine. He had to have been.
Yeah.
Had to have been.
No idea how much money he made, but he was huge.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then I was doing, I wanted to do stand-up my whole life. Mm-hmm. I turned, in high school, I wanted to go see comedy. So after a prom, we went to a show. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking a guy being like, how do I be a comedian? And he was like, do this bringer show. Bring 10 of your friends, and then you could go on stage. And I said, that's how comedy is done.
And where is this at?
It's a stand-up New York.
Okay. So, yeah. Oh, so you were born and raised in New York area.
Yeah, I'm from Jersey.
Oh, where in Jersey?
Bloomfield.
That's not far from here. I work in Weehawken. I went to school at Rutgers in New Brunswick.
Yeah, I'm totally
familiar with the area.
DeVito and I, Anthony DeVito, yes. who introduced us.
Yes.
I went to high school with him.
Oh, okay.
We were best friends in high school. I got him into stand-up.
That's right. He did mention this.
Yeah,
that's right.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
Fuck you, Anthony. Dead to me.
So I wanted to do stand-up, and I'm not sure what happened first. I think it was when I was 18, and then 9/11 happened.
Oh, mining for some great comedy material.
Yeah. 9/11 happened, and I got into a fight with my girlfriend at the time. Her dad said that he was supposed to be in the building, but he wasn't because of Jesus, and we got into an argument. And I was like, you can't say that.
I would have the same response.
And I didn't want to be a dick about it.
But it was
also 9/11, so no one knew how to talk. But I was like, if you're saying that, then you're saying there's so many things you're implying. You're saying that he kept him out, but then kept the planes going. But it was so, and it made me furious.
Yeah.
We broke up, and I was like, I'm going to prove this girl wrong. I'm going to be a fucking comedian, because I always wanted to do it, but I was holding back. So then I did some shows.
So you did it in spite of ex-girlfriend?
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be on Conan in 2 years.
It's like, fuck you. I'm going to be a comedian. You're going to regret breaking up with me.
Yeah. The opening joke, my first joke I ever told was, my girlfriend just broke up with me. I gave her the one thing no one else could. Herpes. And that, not a good joke. I get it. It's a horrible joke.
No. So,
but it was angry. It was like, I don't have herpes. I was taking herpes just so people would think that she had herpes. It was a problem. Thank God. I probably could have got sued for that now.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
But it was like, there was a thing of like, I was hurting and I wanted to do stand up. And that was the thing that pushed me to be bigger. And then I did that for like, I started in 2001, and then I didn't move to New York till 2008.
Okay.
And that's kind of when I got better. Like,
yeah. Well, because you get up every night. You can do 5-6 spots a night if you really hustle for it. You know?
Yeah. And I didn't.
Not even that hard of a hustle. You just actually need to just travel to them.
Yeah. I met Mike Vecchione. I was working at Rascals in Montclair, and I met Mike Vecchione, and I was a door guy at Rascals because I just needed to be around it. You know? And I was doing stand up. And Ed Kavanaugh, who's a manager at Gotham, he comes up to me. And he was like, Greg, how often are you getting up, right? And I go, you can't get up more than me. I get up every Monday, and then I do the Friday mic, and I do the bringer once a month. And I was like, who's working harder than me?
He goes, he's like, every comic in New York.
And then he goes, Mike, how often are you getting up? And he goes, I get up 3-4 times a night. And my head exploded. I was like, what the fuck? How is that possible? Is that possible?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, you want to do it. You got to go to New York. Mm. And then I sold my car. Like, it took me a few more years. I sold my car and moved to New York.
Yeah.
And then that's where I kind of just started being, like, more serious about it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. So Stand Up New York was your first place you got up?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then I'm assuming that you just started jumping from club to club. I need dirt on clubs.
Oh, yeah.
No comedian will tell me any dirt on clubs. Well, I understand why, but.
Sure.
But
I need that
$25. That guy fucking sucks. Yeah, that guy fucking sucks. Fuck him in the face.
The
only beefs I know about clubs are like when comedians have like actual legitimate beefs. Like Jay Oakerson had a beef with, Comic Strip a couple years back?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So he came to the defense of another comedian who was being basically like, he called a patron a cunt, I think is what it was.
Yes.
Not Jay, the other guy. It was Kevin something, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm totally sidetracked. But anyways, so like no comedian will give me any dirt on any clubs.
Well, every club is a certain level of shit. Of course. It's like you mostly hate all of them. But then it's just like, well, there are some that's like, well, you're nicer to me there. It's like, oh, they're nicer there, but they don't pay as much.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, they pay right, but whatever. And then there's like the seller, which does everything, and that's why everyone wants to be there.
Of course.
You know, but it's like, for me, it's like, you know, it's like there's so many clubs where I'm like, oh, this guy is fucking me over. But the stage time is good, and I enjoy the wait staff.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's, like, Levity is a great one for me
up in Nyack. Okay.
Because they're so nice.
Mm-hmm. It's owned by the Gotham folks.
owned by the Gotham folks. They're so nice to me there. They treat me so well. The room itself is an extremely difficult room because the ceilings are super high.
It's in a mall, right?
It's in a mall. Malls don't bother me so much, but it's the huge ceilings. Yeah. It's like if you were in, like, in an opera, you'd play. So if like there's 12 people there, it sucks. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like the club people are so fucking great. They treat you well. The crowds are good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but there's that one thing that just kind of stinks.
So there's always that one thing.
There's always the one thing. So it's like, are you dealing with a shitty manager or are you dealing with a shitty room? And then like, if it's all around, I got a good story for you and I'll shit on this club.
Okay.
No problem.
All right, cool. This is what I want. Sometimes I rub my hands together like an evil.
LOL.
Okay.
LOL.
Is it still around? It used to be in Midtown, correct? Right? Is it the one we're thinking
of? Times Square.
Okay. It was like right above like the Halloween scary.
It's above a haunted house.
I've never stepped foot in there, so I hear the horror stories. But
oh god, it was a nightmare. For a little while, it was awesome. Luis Gomez.
Yeah, I was gonna say Luis Gomez was running a room there, running a show there at some point.
And he was. The crowds were great. And the comics were great. And you could see that, like, if you bring good comedy,
that dude's a hustler, man.
Yeah, I love Luis.
Yeah.
So I was doing. I mean, I'm telling you everything. I did a set one there. I did a set one time there where this woman got on stage. Tries to grab the microphone, starts pushing me. There's a picture on my Facebook. I've just my hands in the air, and I'm like, I'm like fucking yelling at her. Mm-hmm. The owner is videotaping it to put online, and I'm like, you get this fucking woman off the fucking stage, you maniac. So that's, and I still work there after that. All right, well, you know, I need my stage time.
Yeah.
Just enough. Just so many of those things. They screw you. You don't have much time. They're not paying you right. The owner's a dick. It's all that. They open up a new room. Where it's kind of like a big room, like just a big conference room, curtain behind the stage, stage is high. The guy brings me up. There's three people in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
One guy has sunglasses on, just arms closed in the pitch black, just being an asshole. I go up and the guy goes, ladies and gentlemen, keep it going for your next comedian, Gary Stove. He calls me something, Gary or George Stove.
Greg Stone is not difficult.
Not hard.
At all. It's one of the easiest.
So then I'm like, fuck this guy. Fuck this. I go up. I go to do a joke. This guy goes, nah, man, you corny. The guy in the front row. I went, why am I doing this? I'm not being paid for this set. So I'm like, And I go, fuck it. I'm having a good time. I lean back to the curtain. There's no wall behind the curtain.
Oh, no.
I fall through the curtain. Straight through. Like, whoop. Like, right through the curtain. Onto my elbow. I'm like, motherfucker. The five people in the crowd start laughing at me. The host is laughing at me. I poke my head up like a fucking prairie dog, like furious. I get up. I went, fuck this. Fuck you. Fuck this place. I put the mic in the thing and I walked off.
Oh, no.
I go back to the room, just grab my shit. And someone goes, yo, who's on stage? Oh, the host couldn't have been in the room because he was in the other room. And he goes, yo, who's on stage? And I was like, you figure that shit out. And I never went back. I just got off stage. I was like, and it wasn't even necessarily their fault.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bad crowd and there's a wall that I didn't anticipate. But I was like, this was the straw. It was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not coming back to this place ever again.
What do you think it is about comedians who are because every comedian has a story like that.
Yeah.
It's they were in the middle of nowhere. It was a shit room and there was a shit crowd and this happened. Like, what do you think it is about comedians and that and doing that? Is it just that's the way comedy is? Is it just that's the way you got to cut your teeth? Or is
what
just,
do you mean just doing bad stuff?
Well, no. Why do comedians put up with that?
Well, I mean,
is it stage time?
For me, it's like, I know I want to be the best I can be.
Yeah.
I want to be the best comedian I can be. Mm-hmm. Sitting at home, I'm not going to be the best I can be.
That's true.
You know? I know that, and all these shitty rooms, like I came up in New Jersey, so all these shitty rooms have strengthened certain muscles.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, well, I always look at that of like, this is a muscle I'm working. This is a horrible room. If I could win this room over, I could win any room over.
Okay.
But at some point, you go, that muscle's strong enough. I'm never coming back to this fucking place. Shit. You know,
because like I've always heard stories of like some comedians, like Patrice O'Neill is a great example, and Daniel Tosh are two that pop in my head right away. They would get on stage and they would like just kick people out before a show would start. They're like, I'm not dealing with your bullshit.
Yeah,
like I don't think you can like. But then
I
again,
can't do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but you got to do it when you're Patrice O'Neill or Daniel Tosh. It's like, where's that turning point where it's like I no longer need to deal with bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of almost like. I look at it, and I'm sure I've heard this analogy by someone. I forget it was probably a very famous comedian.
Yeah.
telling this analogy, but like there, it's like school, you know, your first 4 years is like high school, and then you got to go to college, and then you gotta, and then at some point you're like, oh, cool, like I actually know how to do this. Because how long does it take you to, before you feel like you can call yourself a comedian? I'm sure it's got to be a couple of years. I have a
weird feeling about this.
Okay.
I think as soon as you start telling jokes, you're a comedian.
Really? Okay.
As soon as the
I've never heard that. In
a, yeah, the I, day you start, you're a comedian. But it's not about being a comedian.
Yeah.
It's about being a great comedian. You know what I mean? So like, you're a comedian. Now take that ownership and work as hard as you can. Sure, you go to a, you go to your day job and you go, I'm a comedian. And then your friends come out and they don't laugh. Well, you told your friends you're a comedian and you didn't stand up to that. So it might be better for you to not walk around telling everybody you're a fucking comedian and then you perform and then you suck. But the truth is, it's like there is no rules on when you're a comedian. There's no degree.
Yeah, it's true. And there's no like gatekeeper of showbiz. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You could be a, and that's the thing is, fuck the gatekeepers. No club says they don't work you. You're not fired from comedy.
That's what I mean. There are gatekeepers of showbiz. Exactly. But what I mean by is that it's like no one can tell you you have to quit or you're fired from the game of comedy.
And you don't. And
I guess crowds will eventually tell you you're done with the game of comedy.
But that's what's hard too. Is that? I mean, I know so many guys who sucked for so long.
Yeah.
And then got good.
I've seen that.
Which is such a terrible thing to be like. Well, then maybe you're just a bad comedian. Being like, well, maybe I just suck now. And if I put 10 more years in, I'll get good.
Yeah.
You know.
That's got to be tough. Like. So much time needs to be put in. Like, there's the Gladwell 10,000 hours thing. It's like so many comics are like, just gotta put in time, and then all of a sudden there's some sort of like switch that's flipped or light bulb that goes off. There's very few people who have that raw natural talent, and those guys you see ascend very quickly. You know,
I also don't. Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay. No, do you disagree with me?
No, I don't disagree with you in any way.
Oh, because I want you to
approve of when people go with. I don't believe in talent. I think I say fuck talent.
Okay.
I don't. Because to me, it's like, yeah, talent is great. It's going to be kind of funny. And I know I have some kind of talent. Okay. You know what I mean? But it's the work that made me good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I see so many guys who I grew up with who were raw, just fucking funny dudes, but refused to put the time in. Yeah. You know? And then they quit comedy or whatever, and they didn't want to take it seriously. So many guys you know now, you go on stage and just like, hey, motherfuckers! And you're like, yeah, it's empty calories.
Okay.
You know? And it's like, you have that. Now, that's what I grew up. A block out of Newark, New Jersey. Yeah. So as comedy went, we ran on Martin and loud comedy being like funny on the block.
Yeah, that Def Jam style.
Yeah. And when I got to New York, I kind of realized that a lot of the shit I was doing was just empty calories.
Okay.
So I had to relearn how to do comedy through myself in the alt scene where no one was doing act outs. If I did an act out, people got mad.
I've never heard it classified as empty calories, but it's actually in a very interesting way of putting it.
I kind of think of it as empty calories. You know, there's nothing behind it. It's just a bunch of yelling and screaming. And,
And I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've just never heard it referred to as empty calories, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It's a good way. I'm going to steal that.
Go ahead.
Just so you know. Greg Stone said it's empty calories. Stop yelling on stage, man. I mean, but so you basically, so you come to New York, okay, I'm trying to keep the timeline on track here. So you come, now did you do college or just like straight to New York after high school?
I went to college for one semester where I took algebra.
Okay.
Which most people took in middle school.
Yeah, I took it in like seventh grade.
I took a radio class, improv class, and a stand-up class, and a sketch class.
What school did you go to?
I went to William Patterson, and they had all these they had all these random, like, weird, like, fun classes you could take.
Yeah.
I took all the comedy classes.
Yeah.
Failed algebra.
Of course. Doesn't strike me as... of all that list, that's the one that... Yeah, of course. This is the one I don't like.
I just suck at math.
Yeah.
I had a stand-up teacher, and he said, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to be a comedian. And he goes, well, why are you in college? And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I should get college. He was like... No, you're just going to walk out of this with debt.
Yeah.
You're not going to make money in comedy. It's like, you should drop out. So my college teacher told me to drop out of college.
That's great.
And for the most part, it was just kind of what happened. I just kind of, it was getting expensive. I was paying for it all on my own. I was like, why am I working so hard on a backup plan?
Yeah.
You know, I worked in a hospital and it was just like, what am I doing? I got to get the fuck out of here.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. So you come to New York and you basically start working the alt rooms, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't get stage time on the clubs because the clubs are pretty hard to break into. And to be honest, I wasn't. I don't know if I was club ready. I was working some clubs in New Jersey. I was working the Rascals in New Jersey.
Okay.
And then it closed down. So then we were like, I have to move to New York.
Yeah. There's not a lot in Jersey.
No.
And the ones that are like weird, like Uncle Vinny's. Have you ever seen?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I've been to Uncle Vinny's and it's just like, I don't know what half of Jersey did pre-Sopranos imaging.
Yeah.
Because, it just, I don't know, the Sopranos became a thing, yeah. And then like half of Jersey became the Sopranos.
That's a huge, it was, they became, everyone's like, this is what Jersey people are like. Yeah. It's like, no, well, that's what we're, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
became the Sopranos. Well,
yeah, like, when did the Sopranos come out? 99, 98? Yeah. So like, I don't remember what Jersey looked like pre-99.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I auditioned for that guy.
Okay.
And it did not. I drove, so that's like, you know, 2 hours away or something for me.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not really sure, but I drove down with my brother.
Okay.
No one shows up to the show that I'm auditioning on. The only person in the crowd is my brother. And I go, oh man, sucks we can't do this. And he goes, no, you can do this. The guy makes me audition. I get on, I tell my first joke to my brother. He gets up, walks out of the room, and then I'm just looking at my brother like, do I keep going? Like, I don't know how to do this to you. I can't just do my act to you. And he was like, please don't keep going. And I was like, all right. So I'm just going to stand here. And then we left. It was like,
did he even like come back?
I don't remember. It's weird.
Cause this is weird.
A long time ago. This is probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
So I don't remember how. I just remember being like, whatever. He was like, okay, I'll call you or something. He never called me. Yeah. It was so awkward. And then there was a guy, Gemini, who I think is like a puppet guy. And I think he performed. I think he performed for like nobody. I think I left. And I think the guy made him do.
Oh, so this was an actual show.
It was an actual show.
This wasn't just like an audition on like 2 o'clock on like a on like a,
it was a show that he did not cancel. That the only people were there was my brother and I think this girl who I was living with at the same time.
Wow,
which was crazy. Yeah.
But I feel like those are also great stories. Like you have that story for the rest of your life.
So happy.
You know
so
what
happy.
I mean? Like at the time, it's it's the shittiest moment of your life. Yeah. But like you know, put some distance between you. Like oh, I'm glad I have that story.
I probably missed out on $300. You know, tops.
But that's what the story's worth.
And it totally worth it. I'd have paid $200 more to have that story.
Yeah.
So then I started in the alt scene. What happened was I came to New York and I was doing like, I didn't know what to do. So I took a few UCB classes and then I met Derek. I met DC who, DC, oh, I can't think of his last name. DC, and then there was Derek and there was Donald Glover.
I want to say DC Benny, but it's not DC Benny.
It's not DC Benny.
It's DC.
DC. Pearson.
DC Pearson. And it was a weird name, like girlfriend comedy. Ugh, what the hell is their name?
They had an improv group.
Yeah, they had an improv group. And And I'm totally spacing on it.
They had a show. Yeah, I can't remember their name. It wasn't
Derek Comedy?
Derek.
It was Derek Comedy.
Derek Comedy.
That's what it was.
Dominic was the other guy's name.
Dominic. It was Derek Comedy. That was the name of it.
Derek Comedy.
I knew it was like a word, like weird word like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not weird, but just for a comedy troupe.
Derek.
Yeah.
So I meet DC and. He ran a show at the Creek.
Yeah.
And I heard there was like, at that time, I think it was only an open mic at the Creek. It was like an open mic, their show. Your show was called This Is New York. And I was like, hey, man, I do stand up. And I kind of like pleaded weirdly. I was like, man, I just can't get any spots. I'd love to do your show. And he was like, yeah, of course. You're a comedian. Come to the show. Like, he was so nice.
Yeah.
So he was like, come to the show. I did the show. And he was like, dude, you really gave me like a huge compliment. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we're actually stopping our show. You should talk to Rebecca Trent, who ran the Creek.
Yeah, still does.
Yeah. About doing a show. They gave a thing, and then Anthony DeVito and I started a show at the Creek, and then that kind of was our in to the alt scene, and then we started doing all the alt shows and all the Creek shows and all that shit.
And the Creek's got a nice, great vibe over there now. I mean, like, I feel like it took a while, but like over, well, it didn't take a while, but like overnight you started hearing like, oh, people are doing stuff at the Creek and Cave, and for a while there was just like a lot going on there, but then like some point it hit like a tipping point, and like everyone started talking about the Creek and the Cave.
Yeah.
And I feel like that happened a few years back, you know. But it's cool to go over there, you know, because like first of all, the food's good. You can go eat yourself.
The food's
some.
Good. I actually stick up for the food. I'm like, no, the food is great. I love the food.
Yeah. It's like it's like California Tex-Mex type of stuff. Or I don't know the official name of the fare, but it's Mexican food, basically. And there's like, and some of the shows are free, and some of the shows are big, and some of the shows are small. Like, you know, like we just talked about Nick Turner. That's where he taped his special. Colin Quinn has run specials and shows over there.
Yeah.
Skank Fest has become a thing over there with the Legion of Skanks taping over there. And there's Cave Comedy Radio, and then all these other shows that pop up here and there. It's great.
Yeah.
Rebecca's built a really nice thing over there, too.
It is cool, man. It's like a cool way to, like, for me, it was awesome because with the club, you have a real crowd. So, like, you have to do your A. But they don't want it. They didn't want A, so it was 100% exploratory. Mm-hmm. So I mean, every time I'm getting on stage there, it was like I'm exploring any different aspect of what I like doing. And I don't know that I, you know, it's like I hate to say found your voice or whatever, but things that like I feel the most comfortable with storytelling and that shit. A lot of that came from just being able to just be, you know, experiment
yeah.
in that place. That
well, it takes a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while. I mean, like, you know, it's... I look at, like, myself, I'm like, oh, well, you know, and I'm not a comedian by any stretch of the imagination. I just like talking to comedians. But, like, you know, I feel like a big transformative time for me was between high school and college, where it's like, okay, I'm in high school, and I'm my lovable goofball self, and I'm still a goofball in college, but it's just like, I'm a little bit more assertive about things and whatnot, and I'm assuming it's the same way, you know, you kind of, like, start to progress as a comedian, just being comfortable on stage and talking to people is a great thing. So.
That's kind of what you were saying, too, before, about the whole, like, you know, when do you start being able to say no to things almost, you know, like with LOL, it's like, a lot of it's like, once you just get comfortable, like, all right, I'm making enough money to survive now, so now I can kind of turn some things down.
Yeah.
You know, like, I haven't, you know, there are some things that, like, I haven't auditioned for or haven't been, and it's like, well, if they don't happen, they don't happen. I'm a comedian. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I'll be funny. I can do a podcast. I can do my thing, and I'm happy in life.
Yeah.
Everyone, every comedian I know, they're always, like, they're always living in tomorrow, and they forget. It's like, well, why did you get into this? You got into this to tell jokes. You're on stage right now, and I see guys being like, well, I have to get this set so that this can go to the hour, and the hour can go to this. And it's like, well, why don't you just think about making these people who are in front of you right now fucking laugh?
Yeah,
you know, and it's, you know, and I'm trying to be more of like...
In the moment.
Yeah, like mindful of my comedy.
The zen of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I'd love to be more like that. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's great. I mean, like, because the reality of the situation is, like, you know, you don't know what's... For the most part... comedy, there's a little bit of a meritocracy to it. Like, you get out of it what you put into it and hard work. And but there's also a lot of guys who just, like, they get jaded because they didn't get this late night spot. They didn't get this. Yeah. They didn't get that. They look at, they compare themselves to other people.
Yeah.
And the great comics that I've always seen, those guys don't give a shit what other people are doing.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What's me? What's my thing, brand, whatever you call it. And, like, then once they get to a point where those are usually the dudes who, like, they'll offer the best advice to other people, or they'll talk to you about whatever, because they don't give a shit and they don't feel intimidated by you. I feel like it's the open micers who are, like, more like,
this is what comedy needs to be.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's such bullshit because then you're trying to be a comedian that already exists.
Yeah. You think Doug Stanhope gives a fuck about what anyone else does?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't. He's like, I'll live in the middle of nowhere and be one of the best comedians on the planet.
But that's kind of beautiful. Kind of funny to bring back Gallagher.
Yeah.
This is a guy who said, I'm going to fucking smash fruit. You know, it's like, he did, I would love to know what open micer has the balls to even attempt doing something like that.
Could you imagine someone smashing food on stage at the Creek and seeing, like, Rebecca just, like, lose her shit?
She has done, we've done way worse at the Creek. Oh, my God. You know Matt Wayne and Doug Smith?
I know Doug Smith. I don't know Matt Wayne.
Two of the funniest guys, man. Okay. Doug Smith is, they do the show See You in Hell, where they would start the show by blowing fireballs. They've almost set the Creek on fire 100 times. And Rebecca's just like, well, all right, whatever. You know, like, they didn't burn it down yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, fucking, we used to do sketch shows there where we would just have to mopping up fake blood and shit. It's like, I don't know how no one has been killed there.
Yeah, well, it's just luck. It's luck of the draw. At some point, someone's got to die. So.
Yeah.
So what year are we talking about at this point when you started doing these alt rooms? 2008, you said? 2009?
08, 09.
Okay.
And, you know, I moved to New York with DeVito, and we were just kind of doing the thing. And then I was just trying to get work at, like, clubs. So I'd be hanging out at the clubs. Because to me, it's like, it's always been about the clubs. Like, to me, it's like, I don't know. That's where I came up. You know, those were the best comics, you know. Started doing that stuff, you know, just starting doing more road work. Mm-hmm. And then not until I did Axis TV.
At Gotham, Tips at Gotham.
Which is like 2010 did I really feel like, it's so crazy that, like, I think I've always gotten laughs.
Okay.
But then was the first moment of confidence where I was like, someone paid me to do this on television. Now I'm a comedian. Like, it was crazy. And it happened a long time after I started.
Yeah.
And I'm still a guy who I honestly think, I don't have to sound like whatever. It's like, I think I'm happy with what I produce.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, there's not many opportunities I've been given have really paid off.
Yeah. You know,
which is fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, going back to Anthony, I mean, he just had a crazy month. Like,
crazy 3 days.
Yeah.
It all happened in 3 days.
So it's like, but that happens. So it's like, you know, and he's a peer, obviously.
Yeah.
And that just happened. So it's like, it's not like you're behind the eight ball or anything like
behind
that.
Behind the eight ball, I got got him started in comedy.
Yeah. You're not. What? No, but like,
the no, point it doesn't bother me in any way.
No. The point I'm trying to make is like you know, it's that not paying attention to what your peer things of your course. Peers. It's like obviously you're psyched for your peers, but it's also not like, well, he got that. Why didn't I get that? I was here first. Well, you know that kind of shit.
I don't think that.
No. And yeah, I don't think you do. I think it's like refreshing because there are people that definitely think that way. And
I'm doing comedy.
Yeah.
We're doing it. It's already being done.
Yeah.
There's something about, and I don't hate to bring up religion or whatever, but like,
no, it's fine.
as an atheist, mm-hmm. and like, there's just something nice about knowing that this is the only chance we have. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you, the end where you get the things you want,
yeah.
it takes a long time. So if you're waiting for that to happen, you're almost at the end of your life, you know?
Yeah, it's like waiting to live your life. It's like waiting to retire so you can travel.
Yes.
It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're gonna climb mountains when you're 60-something years old? Like, no, go do it when you're 20.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And can take a hit.
Yeah. A lot of, I even know comics who are like, well, I gotta get this kind of act so then I can change to be this kind of comedian. It's like, well, if you want to be that kind of comedian, be that comedian now.
Yeah.
You know, you got things you want to say. Say that shit.
Yeah.
You don't make it funny, make it interesting.
Yeah.
But it's like, who gives a shit? What are you waiting for?
Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, it's nice to have goals. Like, there's definitely check marks in the comedian's life where it's like, okay, late night spot, get past that a certain club that I want to get past that, tape an hour, do a half hour, whatever it is. So, like, you still have to hit those rungs and those milestones. Like, festivals, I imagine, is something that, like, a lot of people like too. Like, I don't know, have you done festivals yet? Or starting new festivals?
Yeah, I did festivals. That's one of those things where I said I'm done with festivals.
Really? I'm surprised. Yeah. You're like the first person that said that.
Yeah.
Most people like love, most comedians that I've talked to at least.
Yeah.
They like festivals because they're like, oh, I don't get to see anybody, you know, so it's kind of like a quick,
a quick chance. Fun.
Yeah, but you're just like, fuck festivals.
No, I mean, if you invite me to a festival and you pay me to do the festival or at least pay for me to be there, I'm in.
Okay.
But I can't do festivals anymore where I just go and hang out, we get drunk, and I lose money. You
know, okay, that
makes
sense.
I can't give up a weekend. You know,
that makes
it's
sense.
Like,
that
there
makes
are
sense.
The higher end festivals I would love to do.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. I submitted to tons of festivals,
mm-hmm.
and I do have a big problem with making your money off of comedy submissions. If you're
those are probably not worth. Like, what great festivals actually have you pay to apply?
Well, yeah, I mean, but there
like,
are a lot.
But does a Just for Laughs ask you for money to apply?
Exactly. That's why I would do Just for Laughs.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I'll do Just for Laughs.
Yeah. We're not talking about the shit ones.
I just talking about like, yeah. No, I know. But those.
No, listen. I firmly believe, and I'm not making a statement. No other comedian. Most comedians agree with this. It's like if you have to pay to submit, it's like fuck off. Like
yeah. I paid a lot of money thinking I don't know what I was thinking when I was doing them, just thinking it was part, and then you realize it's like the last one I did.
Yeah.
I forgot what festival it was, but I uploaded the video, so it had one clip, had one view.
Mm-hmm.
They took $45 from me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get in, and I still had one view. So I paid something like $45 when I only had, I literally think I had $50 in my bank account.
Yeah,
I was like, fuck it, if I get in, this could be big.
Yeah.
And then they didn't even watch the video.
That's bullshit.
That's stealing.
Yeah, that's theft.
You're stealing from people who have no money.
Yeah.
And their dreams. And I said, this is like, I refuse to be a part of that system anymore.
Yeah, I also, well, I mean, yeah, those people are pieces of shit that try to make money off comedians' back. But, there's plenty of guys that do it right.
Oh, of
you
course.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I know we go back to Louis J. Gomez and Skankfest, but, like, that's something he talks about all the time. It's
I'm doing Skankfest. That's a festival I forgot.
You should. And that's a great festival because Louis is like, you're in it because you're funny. He's like, I don't give a shit if you're a dude, a girl, what nationality, race, religion, color, whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, you're doing the festival because we think you're funny,
and
we're going to figure out a way to pay everybody.
Yeah.
And we're still going to make money on this thing. And it's like, that can be done.
Yeah.
On the macro level, with Skankfest is what? What's the attendance at? 400, maybe tops?
Yeah.
Maybe that? And then there's that's the micro level. Then the macro level is like a JFL or Just for Laughs, where it's like one of the most beloved festivals in the world because they can fucking do it right and treat comedians properly. So.
I kind of also forgot about the real festivals. It's like I just go to them and I do them. But it's like, but I still have that thing in my head. When you say festival, I think about these poor kids who are submitting and then paying these people to put on.
Nah, fuck those people, man.
It makes me furious.
Fuck those people. There should be more comedians out there to just kind of stand up too. I think one of the reasons they get away with it is because there's so many comedians dying to be a part of that. And then once you kind of step away from that and you realize the ridiculousness that's going on here, it's like, I'm above this. I'm just going to be a comic.
Yeah.
So
I wonder about those comics who aren't good.
Listen, there's not good lawyers. There's shitty policemen. There's shitty, you know, carpet salesmen. Why aren't there shitty comedians? Like, it happens.
Yeah.
It's got to happen.
But, like, at some point, a shitty lawyer, at least you're kind of making money.
Yeah, that's true. That's
like, these guys who just do these mics for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I know guys who've been doing mics longer than I've been here, mm-hmm. and I do believe are funny, that I'm like, I don't know why you haven't. People probably just look at you in a certain way. Maybe you need to go to another place.
Yeah.
But it's like, at some point, it's like, what's the disconnect? That you're not getting any laughs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, like, mad at them, because it's like, maybe they'll hit it, and then they'll find their own art. And I'm like, I love your art. If you're not dying, mm-hmm. fine. But I don't know. It's such a weird...
It is a weird business. I mean, because look at, like, Mark Maron or Louis C.K. Those guys hit it big late in life.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you have a guy like Pete Davidson or Michael Che, where it's like they were almost, like, kind of touched, and it was like, you know, they got the hand of showbiz like tapped their shoulder and said, ascend, young child. Yeah. So, but there's also a point where, like, you got to kind of have the talent to back it up, though, too.
Sure.
Like, you can put Pete Davidson on SNL, but if he sucks on SNL, he's not on SNL for long. You know what I mean? Like,
but I have a weird thing about that now.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh.
This is a fear I have.
Okay.
Because through the comedy scene now, there was a big thing of, like, we're looking for diversity, which I love diversity.
Yeah,
I'm all for it. But then they're tapping comics who were too young, too new, and they're thrusting them way too fast.
Yeah.
And then they can't back it up. But if they say something like, I know a couple girls who say things just like, they'll just say points.
Yeah.
And then people clap.
Yeah.
And then it's like, that's not comedy. It's, I don't know what that is. There's nothing behind it.
It's preaching, proselytizing. Like,
yes.
Proselytizing. I can't pronounce that word. But yeah, you know what I mean, though? I agree with you that, you know, gun control needs to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not a joke.
Yes.
You need a joke about gun control, not just get up there. I've seen specials of comedians who it's like I understand why you feel this way. I totally get it, whether you be, you know, a minority, a lesbian, or whatever it is. But at the same time, it's like, this is a comedy show. Like, you gotta, like, that's something you write for, like, you know, a website or a blog or something like that. Like, but your stand-up should be its own thing. You should be at least, or you find the funny in this and put it over to your stand-up. So I get that. And there's plenty of examples of, you know, I'm not going to call out names of comedians, but, like, you know, like a show like Guy Code definitely ascended certain comedians, or, you know, male and female, who just weren't ready for it. Where you've seen them, it's like, oh, they got a late night spot, or, oh, they're touring on the road, you know. They're doing 350, 400 person rooms, and they're selling out half the room because they have 15 minutes.
They have
20 minutes. But then you also have guys like Chris DiStefano, who, that guy's great. You know what I mean? So it's like, can you fault him for taking a swing? Can you fault him for taking that shot? You know,
of course not.
Dan Soder was on that show. Dan Soder's fucking hilarious. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like,
and even those girls that, like, they wanted, some of them, like, I can say Carly because I love her.
Yeah, yeah.
Carly is someone who I think that she was thrusted very fast. But
I agree,
with myself, I would see her working and trying hard and doing it the right way. I'm like, well, what would we want you to do? Go back to open mics?
It's like
you're selling out and you believe in this. So it's like, yeah, fuck it. Use this crowd. Find your voice.
Do it, yeah.
It's, you know, Schumer. And, you know, who might
Schumer is a young comedian. Like, you forget how she's only been in the game, what, 10 years maybe?
She's been finding herself on HBO specials.
Yes, she absolutely has.
And it's like, what do you guys say, no?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, her voice, she used to be more of like a Jezelnik.
Absolutely.
Remember, she'd be like a one-liner. Then I started doing stories, and it's like, wow. You know, it's like,
crazy. And then it was like, you know, jokes about my vagina and all this kind of stuff. And now it's kind of like the most recent special she did, with definitely two different types of Amy Schumers. There was like the jokes about my vagina, then there's also like, well, there's a gun control situation going on one of my movies, and I want to address that too. She's growing up right on her special. It's crazy. It's unbelievable to see, and she's a very young comedian. You forget that, like, she went the fame, but she's 10-11 years in the game, I guess, something like that. So that's bonkers to me. You know,
you can't compare her to Louis.
No,
and it's great. People are,
but you can't.
It's crazy, but you can't.
You can't, because Louis got years. Louis started when he was a teenager in this game. So,
that's the thing, too, is even what you were saying before about being like, Louis made it big late. It's like, he was still writing for Conan. On one of the biggest, like, the best Conan writers of all time.
He wasn't a household name, though.
But he was like, he had a career.
He absolutely had a career.
That a lot of us would have been like, you know, you could live off of. You know what I mean?
Did you ever hear that story about why he quit Conan?
No.
Was it Schmeigel who was the head writer before Conan, and he's who hired Louis? He was leaving Conan. And he basically said, Louis's the guy. Like, he's your next head writer. And Louis, you know, got the offer, and he kind of sat down. And I'm obviously paraphrasing this whole thing. But he basically said, he went into Conan after the offer came and said, I can't take this job. And basically, he broke it down for Conan. He's like, I can see the next 25 of years of my life.
Yeah.
I'll make X amount of dollars. Yeah. I'll get X house in Connecticut. Yeah. I'll do this, any other thing. And I just don't want that life. And Conan looked at him and goes, I totally get it. Like, go, you know, go make Pootie Tang, whatever it is.
Thank
but
God
like,
he did.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Even though it sounds like he really got fucked putting that movie together, like by like the studio and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but
like,
it's still just a great story.
It's a fucking great.
Still is fine.
It's fine. It led him to today, but at the same time, it's just like some comedians love that. Some guys want stability. Or some people were like, oh, I won't have
I
a
can't.
Ha-. Well, I mean, it's I think it's, there's a very nomadic element to comedy. It's you're traveling constantly. You're going here. Even just the act of working around the city, you're traveling to different destinations to do stuff. So some comedians are like, ooh, like, I don't want to buy a house and settle down and get a wife. So, like, you know, especially when you're younger, too. I think you want to kind of go and see things. And
the idea, though, of, like, moving up through the ranks and knowing where you'll be is terrifying to me. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. I don't want to know that, like, oh, I'll only achieve this much or, you know, I want to. I like the idea that tomorrow something crazy could happen or who knows, you know, I could be doing something, you know.
Well, you got new glasses. And you have the leading man status.
And I almost threw up because they're definitely the wrong prescription. I've really just been holding this in the whole time.
You could take them off.
Again, I can't see.
No, well, you know what I look like by this point.
No, I really want
it's
to soak
me,
you
in. Me, you sitting in a dark room with like red R's all over the place. We're in the Ryan Gas Studios.
But honestly, though, actually, that's just a weird thing.
Yeah.
But I have to see you because I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, okay.
And there's so many comedians that will just talk over people
that
I'm literally trying to listen. So
you're pretty good.
Don't see your if I don't see your lips moving or if I don't read your facial thing, I'll just keep talking about who the fuck knows what.
All right, so you're now back. You're now in the city. When does the podcast come in? You start a podcast at some point.
Oh, the Rad Dude.
Yeah,
cast.
The Rad Dude Cast.
Yeah,
you do that with Anthony, obviously.
Yeah.
And there's a third person.
Brendan Ayer. Yes, super funny guy.
Yeah. So, I guess the question I'm eventually trying to get to is career goals. Like, is it start a podcast and be a super famous podcaster, or is it do late night into this? Is it get signed and have a sitcom?
Goals for me, if I could do anything right now, if I could dream, I would be a city comic.
Okay.
Meaning I can just perform in all the city clubs I want to.
Okay.
Filming a sitcom that I wrote. I want to write movies, and I would love to write a story. I love any type of storytelling. You know, like I love that kind of stuff. I'd love to have a sitcom that I wrote or a movie that I wrote, but also stand up is the ultimate goal for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I hate to say like whatever, but it's like I would love to be like a Louis. You know, I would love to do for people what Carlin did for me.
Okay.
You know, like when I was sitting there with a Catholic father being like, I don't know, something's weird, and then you watch George Carlin, you go, oh, this is bullshit. You know, like I know it's pretentious, but
Carlin's your guy though. It sounds like
Louis's my guy.
Okay, Louis.
Carlin
guy.
Is definitely one of my guys.
Okay,
but Louis was the first guy I went into New York when I was whatever. The first show I ever went to, what I was talking about before, Louis was there, and he did this absurd joke about owning all the pants, or something like that. And I went, "This is the only guy who's been funny in the way I want to be funny."
Oh, that's cool.
And so, yeah, Louis is like to me. I think he's just always going to be the best.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very, very cool. So, what are you doing to prepare for that?
I write.
I know it's kind of a weird question.
Oh, no. Yeah, I write.
How do you prepare for this?
I mean, to me, it's about...
I'm sorry. I got a visual of you like Rocky Four-ing it out in the woods.
Yeah.
Like running up hills and lifting logs.
Yeah.
But the comedy equivalent, I don't know, lifting pens and writing stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, I love it.
I totally cut you off.
No, you did not.
Utter bullshit.
Yeah.
I cut you off for utter
bullshit.
No,
because then I have that in my head now. And now that's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to go work out.
Maybe "You're the Best Around" plays in the background. You're the best around.
I don't know. I guess, I don't know. Like, for me, it's like for the writing process, because I just love, for me, comedy is all about finding your inner fears and shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, what are the things, what are these inner truths that I love? That's for me is the thing. You know, like, one of my favorite bits, there's like, every bit that I have that I love is one that I went, oh my God, you can't tell anybody about that. It's like, one of my favorite bits was a bit about trying to stick a dildo up my ass. I tried because I was scared of being gay. Not scared of being gay,
You needed to figure it out.
I was scared of being homophobic.
Okay.
Not scared of being gay, because I knew I wasn't gay. I was like, I know I'm not gay. I'm not attracted to men.
Yeah.
That's fine. So that's cool. But it's like, well, then why won't you stick this in your ass? Then you go,
maybe because it would hurt.
Maybe it would hurt. It did hurt. I couldn't get it in. That's the big problem. But there was a fear. And it's like, what?
There was confronted head on.
Yes. And it's like, why is that? So many religion to me was a thing I was scared of. Mm-hmm. I'm scared. I'm like, it's like,
yeah,
I'm scared to ask the real questions here. And then once I broke it down, I went, oh my God. It's like you open up into this whole other pool of water. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then so like, I don't know, for me, it's like just finding the things in myself that I'm afraid to confront, mm-hmm. and then confronting them. And then that's like, that to me is like the best comedy.
The visual of you sticking a dildo up here. Yeah, it's almost too much.
Oh, I said plastic down the bed and everything. I don't know what. It was a horrible
plastic idea. On the bed.
I wasn't sure what was going to happen. It could have been anything.
I've never had a moment like that where I'm like, I'm scared, I'm homophobic, so I'm going to stick a dildo up my ass to prove if I am or not.
Well,
I mean, like, I'm sure you fully learn about yourself once you've shoved the dildo up your ass. And maybe I just haven't learned about myself yet.
Yeah, but why haven't you tried?
You know what? It's a question I've never asked.
Yeah.
But now now that the question has been asked, I'm like, why?
That's
like,
probably the answer.
You're not homophobic. Said. What the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah. Like, straight women do it. Gay men do it. Yeah. Bisexual women do it. Bisexual men do it.
Yeah.
Straight men don't.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If 5 out of 6 people told me to try a pizza place, I'd try that pizza place. We're clearly missing out on something.
You know what? You make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
It makes a lot of fucking sense.
Why have I not done this in my life? And it was weird, and that's where a lot of my act comes from, a lot of like sexual stuff.
But this
like,
might be the impetus of some sort of self-help course you could teach. Like this might be the spark of the next Scientology.
Dude, maybe. Who knows?
I don't know.
Like, what's the thing you're the most embarrassed about? Something you'd never tell anybody. I'm asking you on a podcast.
I know. I'm trying to think. I mean, like, I don't really feel I have most of the same issues most like large dudes have, where it's like, oh shit, I don't want to be like the large dude outside with a shirt off by the pool.
Yeah, me
the too. Reality situation is I have, and literally no one gives a fuck. And as I've gotten older, the give a fuck level has dropped dramatically.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's like, I don't give a shit. But there are some points in my that I play over, like from my childhood, where like, oh, that was a super embarrassing moment, or that was a super whatever. But now that I look back at it, I'm like, it wasn't that embarrassing, but you're like 8 or 9, it's like, oh my God, so traumatic. Like, like one of the things that literally has played over in my head many, many times was I was 8 or 9.
Yeah.
We were going, this is a terrible story. There's just pre-warning you, the payoff is not going to be great.
I don't care.
All right. We were at Valley Forge or one of those old timey colonial type of places, and I was picked to stand in front of the class. It was a class trip. Stand in front of the class and put on like old timey garb. And as the woman was buttoning me up, the other woman was handing her a lozenge of some sort because she was coughing as she was buttoning me up. And she like passes her the lozenge, and instead of me realizing that she was doing it for the cough, I just said, "Oh, cool," and I took one. Again,
I get that.
I was just like, why did I fucking do that? Why did I steal this woman's lozenge? And the whole class like laughed at me. I was like, that was, and again, As a 37-year-old man, zero fucks given about that point. But I definitely played that moment over in my head where I'm like, what were you thinking? It was so stupid. Like, I told you this was going to be a terrible story.
No, but I get it
much. But I've definitely have thought about that numerous times as an adult. Yeah. Of like, what the fuck were you thinking as 8-year-old Matt?
Yeah.
And it's so, that's, first of all, I need better stories. Second of all.
Probably did that last week, by the way. I'm sure.
But it was one of those things. But it was one of those things where I was like, why was that embarrassing? Why were I, what was it? I was trying to like, I guess, psychoanalyze my 8-year-old like intentions as a child. But it was just, I don't know. I've given way too much thought to something that literally everyone forgot about the next day.
Of course. By 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
You didn't get made fun of at lunch for that.
No.
You know?
No. Like that moment, everyone laughed and everyone moved on except me, apparently. So like I said, zero payoff. So terrible story. But I mean, like, it's little shit like that. It's never like, oh my God, I was like so embarrassed. I have no like carry story where I was like in front of a group of people and like some bullshit happened to me where it's like my life is over.
But that's the thing, is that even that story that you just told me, to me, there unpacking it is the beauty of that.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Why did you feel weird? Why do you still think about that?
I don't know.
You know? And really that's the thing. Sitting on that for hours.
It's so stupid.
There's comedy there.
There is. There is.
Because it's so simple. It's something that everyone has a story like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they just did a dumb thing when, oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's exactly what I did.
Gives a shit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, how, you know, I mean... It's I don't know. There's like emotion is like such a crazy thing that when you ever even emotion about something, it's good to go. It's like, well, where is that emotion coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something there that is beautiful that I, you know, I don't know. If that makes sense, I don't know. I'm sure
no, sense. But it's funny because that's something like, first of all, that's something I've never told anyone because the reality situation is it's just a terrible story.
It's terrible.
I'm sure that there's 30 people that listen to this podcast that know me. They're like, oh, why didn't you tell him this story? That was such a better story.
Yeah.
But that's something that for some reason, it just every once in a while, it'll pop into my head. I'm like, yeah, I wonder what I was thinking then.
Yeah.
And I have no idea why it made such an impression on me.
Yeah.
I have no idea why, but like, I wasn't like super embarrassed by it, but I was just like, that was a dumb thing to do.
Can I tell you the dumbest thing I ever did?
Yeah.
I don't know why this story just popped in my head.
Yeah.
I was in love with this girl. Oh, man, this is, I don't know.
Your story's already better than mine.
I was in love with this girl
from
first through sixth grade.
Okay.
I asked her out every year. I went, will you be my girlfriend? And she said no every year. Okay. Seventh and eighth grade, I learned humility, stopped asking.
Okay.
High school, became best friends. I was like, well, I just want to be with my best friend.
Yeah.
End of high school,
some
guy was dating her, and she was like, he breaks up with her, breaks her heart. And she calls me because we're best friends because I was in love with her and I refused to tell her.
Yeah, of course, of course.
God. she goes, I just, you know, guys don't ever blah, blah, blah. Good guys don't treat me right. No guys ever like me. And I just start being like, that's not true. I was like, I know this guy who fucking would die for you. And he thinks this. And every time you're around, it brings him light. Or whatever bullshit saying, you know.
Yeah,
and it was like,
high school bullshit.
He knows that this is how, whatever. And then, you know, and she was like, who thinks that way? And I was like, ah, man, I can't tell you, you know, I promise. And she goes, please tell me who did it. I go, I can't. We hang up the phone. She calls me right back. And she goes, if you don't tell me, she goes, Greg, if this is you and you don't say anything, nothing will ever happen. And I went, Tom. It was our friend Tom.
Oh, geez.
I just told my friend Tom. I was like, it was him. He's in love with you. Blah, 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 blah. And I told my friend Tom, I was like, I just failed. I said you. And he goes like, yeah, I would date her. And I'm like, fuck you, dude. Like, I'm in love with this girl. And you're just going to try to, I was like, oh. But if I have any moment back, if I could take any moment back, I would have just been like, yeah, it's me. I love you.
Yeah.
I treat you, you're my best friend. What do you want in a guy?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm way more fun. Sure, you know, I got double vision and all this shit, but, or whatever, you know, I'm a fucking, you know, whatever the things was, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you're hoping for the 80s John Hughes movie moment where it's like, oh, I love you too. Why did we, you know, you live, and they live happily ever after, but yeah.
It doesn't happen.
Taking that leap doesn't happen, yeah.
Also, looking back now, she's not even a girl that I would, like, she's great, she's cool,
yeah.
But she's not my type.
Well, that also comes just from, like, seeing the rest of the world and learning more and, you know, making different connections with other people and wanting different things. I mean, like, the woman I married is completely different than the woman I dated in high school. Like, you know, because, like, I also, you know, I didn't like drama. Like, but I have friends that love drama. Love drama. And I'd like, you know, so, like, it's like, oh, I'm not dating you because you're in high school and you're drama. And, like, you know, like, I don't like drama, and it's, especially when it comes to relationships and stuff. So, like, I don't know. But, dude, I just realized it's been, like, an hour. We've been just, like, I feel like we could do it if we could yammer all day. So we're going to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, thanks to Anthony DeVito for making this happen. The love connection happening. So, Greg Stone, where can people find out more information about you?
You can go to my website, Greg. Okay. Oh, fuck. I think GregStone.com or it's GregFStone.com. Go to my Twitter, GregStone _.
George Stein.
George Stove.
George Stove.
The Stove Man, getting hot. And if you want to check out my podcast, The Rad Dude Cast, it's me, Brendan Aaron, Anthony DeVito, the very funny, funny guys.
Yeah, definitely check that one out, too. Yeah. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great.
And that was our interview with Greg Stone. Hopefully everything was learned. Bram, I know you always learn something with these interviews, but it was super pleasant having Greg on the podcast. He's a super, super swell dude, and like one, definitely have him back on the podcast again because I feel like we could talk to him for another like 3 hours.
It sounds like you made a friend.
I did. Yeah. Well, we're also kind of the same age, too. We're about the same age, so like he's a super cool dude. So, yeah, so Greg, definitely go follow Greg online. Definitely go look up his work. He's got some great things in the works, and he's actually a really really awesome dude, and he's definitely a comic on the rise. You can follow us basically anywhere. You can type in the Laugh Button in a web browser, social media, website, pretty much anywhere. Just basically type in the Laugh Button.
Instagram.
We're there. Instagram.
Pinterest.
We are on Pinterest, but we haven't used it in a while because...
I was just kidding.
I know, but we've done some data diving. And we just found that Pinterest wasn't our audience, so that's why we aren't on Pinterest. But if you want to go see some old things that were on Pinterest from many years ago, by all means, go do that. But yeah,
Pinterest is basically just kind of like a dream journal, sort of.
It is. It's kind of like my dream book, my wish book. So,
scrapbook.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we're doing a bunch of different contests on the Laugh Button right now. We're running a contest where you can win a meet and greet with Kevin Hart at BookCon in New York City at the end of the month. You and I, Bram, we will actually be in Los Angeles and San Francisco for Clusterfest, so keep an eye on that stuff on the socials and what we're doing for that. We're also running a couple of other contests too. We just wrapped the contest to win Gerard Carmichael's most latest stand-up comedy special. We're running some tickets at giveaways for some other things too, like we have Steve Martin and Martin Short, Ricky Gervais, Kevin James as well. So definitely go to Laugh Button, check out all of our contests that we're running too. And and then Bram, people can follow you on Metal Insider, of course.
Metal Insider for all your latest news in hard rock and metal.
Uh-huh.
It's at Metal Insider everywhere, pretty much.
Yeah,
personally, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I got some pretty good ones. It's Bram Filter. Bramfetamine for Instagram.
Kind of like amphetamines and spam filter.
I'll read my latest tweet.
Okay. Yeah, let's start the segment. Bram reads his latest tweet.
Okay. Listen, I need some followers.
All right, what do we got here? What
Hold
do we
on,
got?
I
got
to wait for it to boot up.
Oh, you didn't have this like preloaded?
I didn't
preloaded?
Have it at the ready, no.
You didn't have this at the ready when it came time for the
look,
the old
look at that bird. Look at that bird just hanging out.
The old Twitter bird.
The Twitter bird.
So, okay, here we go. Hold on. So, ladies and gentlemen,
this isn't worth all the buildup.
Oh, okay. Well, then, sorry.
But I will read it.
This is the latest tweet from Bram, and if you follow this, you'll get this kind of comedy gold.
Yes. H.R. McMaster. Everyone knows who he is. He's the new attorney general person.
Yep.
All right. H.R. McMaster sounds like a bar that has no craft beer and apps with names like queso bombs and onion straws. There you have it.
I'm not laughing because it was funny.
It's pretty
funny. I'm laughing because you are so entertained by this.
I thought it was pretty funny.
It was pretty funny. Yeah. Like for example, I grew up in South Jersey, and there was a bar called PJ Wellingham. PJ Wellingham's.
Been there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you're from the same area, South Jersey, as I am. So, like, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what that is. So, yeah. I think that's where you probably got the joke, I'm assuming.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, you're basically making a South Jersey geographic old joke.
There's so many Irish bars named, like, JP McDrinkalots or
TJ Smith's
TJ Alcoholics.
I gotcha. Cool. So
yes. Anyway,
you were absolutely correct. That was not worth the build up.
I told you. Bram Filter on Twitter.
Bram Filter on Twitter.
Bram Fetamy on Instagram. So, MetalSider.net everywhere else.
So with that being said, and you can find the Laugh Button at thelaughbutton.com and riotcast.com/thelaughbutton. Until next time, he's Bram Titleman. I'm Matt Kleinschmidt. See you later. Bye.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.